terms with the revelation. Eragon always assumed he would be glad to learn the identity of his father. Now that he had, the knowledge revolted him. When he was younger, he often entertained himself by imagining that his father was someone grand and important, though Eragon knew the opposite was far more likely. Still, it never occurred to him, even in his most extravagant daydreams, that he might be the son of a rider, much less one of the Forsworn. It turned a daydream into a nightmare. I was sired by a monster. My father was the one who betrayed the riders to Galbatorix. It left Eragon feeling sullied. But no. As he healed a man's broken spine, a new way of viewing the situation occurred to him, one that restored a measure of his self-confidence. Morzan may be my parent, but he is not my father. Garrow was my father. He raised me. He taught me how to live well and honourably, with integrity. I am who I am because of him. Even Brom and Oromis are more my father than Morzan. And Roran is my brother, not Murtag. Eragon nodded, determined to maintain that outlook. Until then, he had refused to completely accept Garrow as his father. And even though Garrow was dead, doing so relieved Eragon, gave him a sense of closure, and helped to ameliorate his distress over Morzan.
"You have grown wise," observed Saphira.
"Wise?" He shook his head. "No, I've just learned how to think. That much, at least, Oromis gave me." Eragon wiped a layer of dirt off the face of a fallen banner boy, making sure he really was dead, then straightened, wincing as his muscles spasmed in protest. "You realize, don't you, that Brom must have known about this? Why else would he choose to hide in Carvajal while he waited for you to hatch? He wanted to keep an eye upon his enemy's son. It unsettled him to think that Brom might have considered him a threat. And he was right, too. Look what ended up happening to me." Saphira ruffled his hair with a gust of her hot breath.
"Just remember, whatever Brom's reasons, he always tried to protect us from danger. He died saving you from the Razak."
"I know. Do you think he didn't tell me about this because he was afraid I might emulate Morzan, like Murtag has?"
"Of course not."
He looked at her, curious. "How can you be so certain?" She lifted her head high above him and refused to meet his eyes or to answer. "Have it your way, then." Kneeling by one of King Orin's men, who had an arrow through the gut, Eragon grabbed his arms to stop him from writhing. "Easy now."
"Water!" groaned the man. "For pity's sake, water! My throat is as dry as sand. Please, Shadeslayer."
Sweat beaded his face. Eragon smiled, trying to comfort him. "I can give you a drink now, but it'd be better if you wait until after I heal you. Can you wait? If you do, I promise you can have all the water you want."
"You promise, Shadeslayer?"
"I promise." The man visibly struggled against another wave of agony before saying,
"If I must."
With the aid of magic, Eragon drew out the shaft. Then he and Saphira worked to repair the man's innards, using some of the warrior's own energy to fuel the spell. It took several minutes. Afterward, the man examined his belly, pressing his hands against the flawless skin, then gazed at Eragon, tears brimming in his eyes.
Shadeslayer, you...
Eragon handed him his water skin. "Here, keep it. You have greater need of it than I." 100 yards beyond, Eragon and Saphira breached an acrid wall of smoke. There they came upon Oric and 10 other dwarves, some women, arrayed around the body of Hrothgar, who lay upon 4 shields, resplendent in his golden mail. The dwarves tore at their hair, beat their breasts, and wailed their lamentations to the sky. Eragon bowed his head and murmured, "Steidja unan muranar, Hrothgar kunungar." After a time, Oric noticed them and rose, his face red from crying and his beard torn free of its usual braid. He staggered over to Eragon and, without preempt, asked,
"Did you kill the coward responsible for this?"
"He escaped," Aragorn could not bring himself to explain that the rider was Murtagh. Oric stamped his fist into his hand.
Barjun!
But I swear to you, upon every stone in Alagaesia, that as one of Durgrimst in Jeetum, I'll do everything I can to avenge Hrothgar's death.
Aye, you're the only one beside the elves strong enough to bring this foul murderer to justice. And when you find him, grind his bones to dust, Aragorn. Pull his teeth and fill his veins with molten lead. Make him suffer for every minute of Hrothgar's life that he stole.
Wasn't it a good death? Wouldn't Hrothgar have wanted to die in battle, with Volund in his hand?
In battle, yes. Facing an honest foe who dared stand and fight like a man. Not brought low by a magician's trickery.
Shaking his head, Oric looked back at Hrothgar, then crossed his arms and tucked his chin against his collarbone. He took several ragged breaths.
When my parents died of the pox, Hrothgar gave me a life again. He took me into his hall. He made me his heir. Losing him?
Oric pinched the bridge of his nose between his thumb and forefinger, covering his face.
Losing him is like losing my father again.
The grief in his voice was so clear, Aragorn felt as if he shared the dwarf's sorrow. I understand, he said.
I know you do, Aragorn. I know you do.
After a moment, Oric wiped his eyes and gestured at the 10 dwarves.
Before anything else is done, we have to return Hrothgar to Farthendur, so he can be entombed with his predecessors. Durgrimst in Jeetum must choose a new Grimstboreth, and then the 13 clan chiefs, including the ones you see here, will select our next king from among themselves. What happens next, I know not. This tragedy will embolden some clans and turn others against our cause.
He shook his head again. Aragorn put his hand on Oric's shoulder. Don't worry about that now. You have but to ask, and my arm and my will are at your service. If you want, come to my tent, and we can share a cask of mead and toast Hrothgar's memory.
I'd like that, but not yet. Not until we finish pleading with the gods to grant Hrothgar safe passage to the afterlife.
Leaving Aragorn, Oric returned to the circle of dwarves and added his voice to their keening. Continuing on through the burning plains, Saphira said,
Hrothgar was a great king.
Aye, and a good person, Aragorn sighed. We should find Arya and Nasawada. I couldn't even heal a scratch right now, and they need to know about Murtagh.
Agreed.
They angled south toward the Varden's encampment. But before they travelled more than a few yards, Aragorn saw Roran approaching from the Jeet River. Trepidation filled him. Roran stopped directly in front of them, planted his feet wide apart, and stared at Aragorn, working his jaw up and down as if he wanted to talk, but was unable to get the words past his teeth. Then he punched Aragorn on the chin. It would have been easy for Aragorn to avoid the blow, but he allowed it to land, rolling away from it a bit, so Roran did not break his knuckles. It still hurt. Wincing, Aragorn faced his cousin. I guess I deserved that. That you did. We have to talk.
Now?
It can't wait. The Razak captured Katrina, and I need your help to rescue her. They've had her ever since we left Carverhal.
So that's it.
In an instant, Aragorn realized why Roran appeared so grim and haunted, and why he had brought the entire village to Cirda.
Brom was right. Galbatorix sent the Razak back to Palancar Valley.
Aragorn frowned, torn between his responsibility to Roran and his duty to report to Nasawada.
There's something I need to do first, and then we can talk, all right? You can accompany me if you want.
I'll come. As they traversed the pockmarked land, Aragorn kept glancing at Roran out of the corner of his eye. Finally, he said in a low voice, "I missed you." Roran faltered, then responded with a curt nod. A few steps later, he asked, "This is Sephira, right? Jode said that was her name." "Hi." Sephira peered at Roran with one of her glittering eyes. He bore her scrutiny without turning away, which was more than most people could do.
"I have always wanted to meet Aragorn's nestmate."
"She speaks!" exclaimed Roran when Aragorn repeated her words. This time Sephira addressed him directly.
"What, did you think I was as mute as a rock lizard?"
Roran blinked. "I beg your pardon. I didn't know that dragons were so intelligent." A grim smile twisted his lips. "First Razak and magicians, now dwarves, riders and talking dragons. It seems the whole world has gone mad." "It does seem that way. I saw you fight that other rider. Did you wound him? Is that why he fled? Wait, you'll hear." When they reached the pavilion Aragorn was searching for, he swept back the flap and ducked inside, followed by Roran and Sephira, who pushed her head and neck in after them. In the centre of the tent, Nasuada sat on the edge of the table, letting a maid remove her twisted armour while she carried on a heated discussion with Arya. The cut on her thigh had been healed. Nasuada stopped in the middle of her sentence as she spotted the new arrivals. Running toward them, she threw her arms around Aragorn and cried, "Where were you? We thought you were dead or worse." "Not quite."
"The candle still burns," murmured Arya.
Stepping back, Nasuada said, "We couldn't see what happened to you and Sephira after you landed on the plateau. When the red dragon left and you didn't appear, Arya tried to contact you but felt nothing, so we assumed..." She trailed off. "We were just debating the best way to transport Dúvrangar Gata and an entire company of warriors across the river." "I'm sorry. I didn't mean to worry you. I was just so tired after the fight I forgot to lower my barriers." Then Aragorn brought Roran forward. "Nasuada, I would like to introduce my cousin, Roran. Arjihad may have mentioned him to you before. Roran, Lady Nasuada, leader of the Varden, and my liege lord. And this is Arya Svitkona, the elves' ambassador." Roran bowed to each of them in turn.
"It is an honour to meet Aragorn's cousin," said Nasuada.
"Indeed," added Arya.
After they finished exchanging greetings, Aragorn explained that the entire village of Carvajal had arrived on the Dragonwing, and that Roran was the one responsible for killing the twins. Nasuada lifted a dark eyebrow.
"The Varden are in your debt, Roran, for stopping their rampage. Who knows how much damage the twins would have caused before Aragorn or Arya could have confronted them. You helped us to win this battle. I won't forget that. Our supplies are limited, but I will see that everyone on your ship is clothed and fed, and that your sick are treated."
Roran bowed even lower. "Thank you, Lady Nasuada."
"If I weren't so pressed for time, I would insist upon knowing how and why you and your village evaded Galbatorix's men, travelled to Sirda, and then found us. Even just the bare facts of your trek make an extraordinary tale. I still intend to learn the specifics, especially since I suspect it concerns Aragorn, but I must deal with other, more urgent matters at the moment."
"Of course, Lady Nasuada."
"You may go, then."
"Please," Aragorn said, "let him stay. He should be here for this."
Nasuada gave him a quizzical look.
"Very well, if you want. But enough of this dawdling. Jump to the meat of the matter and tell us about the rider."
Aragorn began with a quick history of the three remaining dragon eggs, two of which had now hatched, as well as Morzan and Murtagh, so that Roran would understand the significance of his news. Then he proceeded to describe his and Sephira's fight with Thorn and the mysterious rider, paying special attention to his extraordinary powers.
"As soon as he spun his sword around, I realized we had duelled before. So I threw myself at him and tore off his helm."
Aragorn paused.
"It was Murtagh, wasn't it?"
asked Nasuada quietly.
"How?"
she sighed.
"If the twins survived, it only made sense that Murtagh had as well. Did he tell you what really happened that day in Farthendur?"
So Aragorn recounted how the twins betrayed the Varden, recruited the Urgals, and kidnapped Murtagh. A tear rolled down Nesuada's cheek.
"It's a pity that this befell Murtagh, when he has already endured so much hardship. I enjoyed his company in Trondheim, and believed he was our ally, despite his upbringing. I find it hard to think of him as our enemy."
Turning to Roran, she said,
"It seems I am also personally in your debt for slaying the traitors who murdered my father." "Fathers, mothers, brothers, cousins," thought Aragorn. "It all comes down to family."
Summoning his courage, he completed his report with Murtagh's theft of Zarok, and then his final, terrible secret.
"It can't be," whispered Nesuada.
Aragorn saw shock and revulsion cross Roran's face before he managed to conceal his reactions. That, more than anything else, hurt Aragorn.
"Could Murtagh have been lying?"
asked Arya.
"I don't see how. When I questioned him, he told me the same thing in the ancient language."
A long, uncomfortable silence filled the pavilion. Then Arya said,
"No one else can know about this. The Varden are demoralized enough by the presence of a new rider, and they'll be even more upset when they learn it's Murtagh, whom they fought alongside and came to trust in Farthendur. If word spreads that Aragorn Shadeslayer is Morzan's son, the men will grow disillusioned, and few people will want to join us. Not even King Orin should be told."
Nesuada rubbed her temples.
"I fear you're right. A new rider."
She shook her head.
"I knew it was possible for this to occur, but I didn't really believe it would, since Galbatorix's remaining eggs had gone so long without hatching."
"It has a certain symmetry," said Aragorn.
"Our task is doubly hard now. We may have held our own today, but the Empire still far outnumbers us, and now we face not one, but two riders, both of whom are stronger than you, Aragorn. Do you think you could defeat Murtagh with the help of the elves' spellcasters?"
"Maybe, but I doubt he'd be foolish enough to fight them and me together." For several minutes they discussed the effect Murtagh could have on their campaign, and strategies to minimize or eliminate it. At last Nesuada said,
"Enough. We cannot decide this when we are bloody and tired, and our minds are clouded from fighting. Go, rest, and we shall take this up again tomorrow."
As Aragorn turned to leave, Arya approached and looked him straight in the eye.
"Do not allow this to trouble you overmuch, Aragorn Elder. You are not your father, nor your brother. Their shame is not yours."
"Aye," agreed Nesuada.
"Nor imagine that it has lowered our opinion of you."
She reached out and cupped his face.
"I know you, Aragorn. You have a good heart. The name of your father cannot change that."
Warmth blossomed inside Aragorn. He looked from one woman to the next, then twisted his hand over his chest, overwhelmed by their friendship.
"Thank you."
Once they were back out in the open, Aragorn put his hands on his hips and took a deep breath of the smoky air. It was late in the day, and the garish orange of noon had subsided into a dusky gold light that suffused the camp and battlefield, giving it a strange beauty.
"So, now you know," he said.
Roran shrugged. "Blood always tells."
"Don't say that," growled Aragorn. "Don't ever say that."
Roran studied him for several seconds. "You're right. It was an ugly thought. I didn't mean it." He scratched his beard and squinted at the bloated sun resting upon the horizon. "Nesuada wasn't what I expected." That forced a tired chuckle out of Aragorn. "The one you were expecting was her father, Arjihad. Still, she's as good a leader as he was, if not better."
"Her skin, is it dyed?"
"No, that's the way she is." Just then Aragorn felt Jode, Horst, and a score of other men from Carvajal hurrying toward them. The villagers slowed as they rounded a tent and glimpsed Saphira.
"Horst!" exclaimed Aragorn.
Stepping forward, he grasped the smith in a bear hug. "It's good to see you again." Horst gaped at Aragorn. Then a delighted grin spread across his face.
"Blast if it isn't good to see you as well, Aragorn. You've filled out since you left."
"You mean since I ran away?" Meeting the villagers was a strange experience for Aragorn. Hardship had altered some of the men so much he barely recognized them, and they treated him differently than before, with a mixture of awe and reverence. It reminded him of a dream where everything familiar is rendered alien. He was disconcerted by how out of place he felt among them. When Aragorn came to Jod, he paused. "You know about Brom?"
"Arjihad sent me a message, but I'd like to hear what happened directly from you."
Aragorn nodded, grave.
"As soon as I have the chance, we'll sit down together and have a long talk."
Then Jod moved on to Saphira and bowed to her.
"I waited my entire life to see a dragon, and now I have seen two in the same day. I am indeed lucky. However, you are the dragon I wanted to meet."
Bending her neck, Saphira touched Jod on the brow. He shivered at the contact.
"Give him my thanks for helping to rescue me from Galbatorix. Otherwise I would still be languishing in the king's treasury. He was Brom's friend, and so he is our friend."
After Aragorn repeated her words, Jod said,
"Atra esterni onor Thelduin, Saphira Bjartskula,"
surprising them with his knowledge of the ancient language.
"Where did you go?" Horst asked Roran. "We looked high and low for you after you took off in pursuit of those two magicians."
"Never mind that now. Return to the ship and have everyone disembark. The Varden are sending us food and shelter. We can sleep on solid ground tonight."
The men cheered. Aragorn watched with interest as Roran issued his commands. When at last Jod and the villagers departed, Aragorn said,
"They trust you. Even Horst obeys you without question. Do you speak for all of Carvajal now?"
"I do." Heavy darkness was advancing upon the burning plains by the time they found the small two-man tent the Varden had assigned Aragorn. Since Saphira could not fit her head through the opening, she curled up on the ground beside and prepared to keep watch.
"As soon as I get my strength back, I'll see to your wounds," promised Aragorn.
"I know. Don't stay up too late talking."
Inside the tent, Aragorn found an oil lantern that he lit with steel and flint. He could see perfectly well without it, but Roran needed the light. They sat opposite each other. Aragorn, on the bedding laid out along one side of the tent, Roran on a folding stool he found leaning in a corner. Aragorn was uncertain how to begin, so he remained silent and stared at the lamp's dancing flame. Neither of them moved. After uncounted minutes, Roran said, "Tell me how my father died."
"Our father?"
Aragorn remained calm as Roran's expression hardened. In a gentle voice, he said,
"I have as much right to call him that as you. Look within yourself, you know it to be true."
"Fine. Our father. How did he die?" Aragorn had recounted the story upon several occasions, but this time he hid nothing. Instead of just listing the events, he described what he had thought and felt ever since he had found Saphira's egg, trying to make Roran understand why he did what he did. He had never been so anxious before.
"I was wrong to hide Saphira from the rest of the family," Aragorn concluded, "but I was afraid you might insist on killing her, and I didn't realize how much danger she put us in. If I had... After Garrow died, I decided to leave in order to track down the Razak, as well as to avoid putting Carvajal in any more danger."
A humorless laugh escaped him.
"It didn't work, but if I had remained, the soldiers would have come far sooner. And then, who knows? Galbatorix might have even visited Palancar Valley himself. I may be the reason Garrow, father, died, but that was never my intention, nor that you and everyone else in Carvajal should suffer because of my choices."
He gestured helplessly.
"I did the best I could, Roran."
And the rest of it. Brom being a rider, rescuing Arya at Gilead, and killing a shade at the dwarves' capital. All that happened?
Aye.
As quickly as he could, Aragorn summarised what had taken place since he and Saphira set forth with Brom, including their sojourn to Ellesmira, and his own transformation during the Agaiti Blodron. Leaning forward, Rohan rested his elbows on his knees, clasped his hands, and gazed at the dirt between them. It was impossible for Aragorn to read his emotions without reaching into his consciousness, which he refused to do, knowing it would be a terrible mistake to invade Rohan's privacy. Rohan was silent for so long Aragorn began to wonder if he would ever respond. Then, "You have made mistakes, but they are no greater than my own. Garrow died because you kept Saphira secret. Many more have died because I refused to give myself up to the Empire. We are equally guilty." He looked up, then slowly extended his right hand. "Brother?" "Brother," said Aragorn. He gripped Rohan's forearm, and they pulled each other into a rough embrace, wrestling to and fro as they used to do at home. When they separated, Aragorn had to wipe his eyes with the heel of his hand. "Galbatorix should surrender now that we're together again," he joked. "Who can stand against the two of us?" He lowered himself back onto the bedding. "Now, you tell me, how did the Razak capture Katrina?" All happiness vanished from Rohan's face. He began to speak in a low monotone, and Aragorn listened with growing amazement as he wove an epic of attacks, sieges, and betrayal, of leaving Carvajal, crossing the Spine, and raising the docks of Tirm, of sailing through a monstrous whirlpool. When at last he finished, Aragorn said, "You are a greater man than I. I couldn't have done half those things. Fight, yes, but not convince everyone to follow me." "I had no choice. When they took Katrina," Rohan's voice broke, "I could either give up and die, or I could try to escape Galbatorix's trap, no matter the cost." He fixed his burning eyes on Aragorn. "I have lied and burned and slaughtered to get here. I no longer have to worry about protecting everyone from Carvajal. The Varden will see to that. Now I have only one goal in life, to find and rescue Katrina, if she's not already dead. Will you help me, Aragorn?" Reaching over, Aragorn grabbed his saddlebags from the corner of the tent, where the Varden had deposited them, and removed a wooden bowl and the silver flask of enchanted Faelnerve Oromus had given him. He took a small sip of the liqueur to revitalize himself, and gasped as it raced down his throat, making his nerves tingle with cold fire. Then he poured Faelnerve into the bowl until it formed a shallow pool the width of his hand. "Watch." Gathering up his burst of new energy, Aragorn said, "Dramor Cooper." The liqueur shimmered and turned black. After a few seconds, a thin key of light appeared in the centre of the bowl, revealing Katrina. She lay slumped against an invisible wall, her hand suspended above her with invisible manacles, and her copper hair splayed like a fan across her back. "She's alive." Rohan hunched over the bowl, grasping at it as if he thought he could dive through the Faelnerve and join Katrina. His hope and determination melded with a look of such tender affection. Aragorn knew that only death could stop Rohan from trying to free her. Unable to sustain the spell any longer, Aragorn let the image fade away. He leaned against the wall of the tent for support. "Aye," he said wearily, "she's alive. And chances are she's imprisoned in Helgrind, in the Razak's lair." Aragorn grasped Rohan by the shoulders. "The answer to your question, brother, is yes. I will travel to Dras Leona with you. I will help you rescue Katrina. And then, together, you and I shall kill the Razak and avenge our father." This is Gerard Doyle. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Eldest, Inheritance, Book 2, by Christopher Paolini. This programme was produced and directed by Taro Meyer,
Executive Producer Jacob Bronstein. Text copyright 2005 by Christopher Paulini. Production copyright 2005, Random House Inc. All rights reserved.
Hello, this is Jim Dale, narrator of the Harry Potter audiobook series. Listening to audiobooks isn't just great entertainment, it's also a great way for your family to experience and enjoy books together. Studies have shown that listening to stories read aloud helps children build vocabulary, improve their reading skills, and succeed more readily in school. It's an important step on the road to becoming a good reader, and one of the best ways to help ensure a lifelong love of literature for the children you care about. Check your local retailer for the wide selection of audiobooks available from Listening Library. Or if you would like to visit us online for more information, check our website at www.listeninglibrary.com. Thank you, and happy listening.